Greetings, greetings, fellow stargazers. This is 42 Minutes, a production of SyncBook Radio and thesyncbook.com, a weekly conversation with the interesting artists and thinkers of our day. I am Douglas Bowles, and this is episode number 97. Okay, today we have our sky set up for August 13th, and we're looking toward the east, toward the holy
through
city.
Through the darkness, into a vortex, to unveil a monster with John Cale. Mr. Cale, digital media specialist, is host to the Cosmic Gnostic website, located at cosmicgnostic.com. Most recently, he has been doing freelance work for a little-known radio program by the name of Red Eyes Creations. Now, John contributed a chapter to the Sync book, Volume 2, in 2012, and is the author of the 2012 Oracle Media publication, Mysterious Star Map, Charleston, South Carolina, of which we will be speaking about today. This is our second time speaking with Mr. Cale, having had the pleasure of meeting him last December on episode number 63, which I would encourage you to go back and check. So thanks for coming back, and how is it down there in the low country?
Yeah, thanks for having me back on, guys. Down in here in the low country, it's been a pretty mellow summer, and mid-80s, and yeah, it's great to be back with you guys.
It was a pleasure having you back. Like we were discussing just recently, I had the pleasure of visiting your wonderful city. And, you know, I can totally understand how walking around or finding yourself walking around becoming engrossed. The thing that I found interesting, I only spent a week down there, but I wonder how many times you've walked down the same street, and then like the 10th or 12th time you walk down, you're like, holy crap, I didn't even notice that was there. Seems to me that city's got a lot of secrets.
Oh, yeah. That is kind of like the gist of the frustration of actually behind all of this this work, because it's just like what you said. Like basically, every time you go down there, you'll find something new that you've never seen before. I mean, literally, every single time I go down there, and I've been here for years, and every time I ever go down to downtown Charleston, it is always something special to see. The city has a lot of history to it. This is the beginning of the United States, and even before then. And so we're not just dealing with a lot of people think of Charleston as being a city for the Civil War, where the Civil War was played out. But
it was a Revolutionary War, too. I mean,
oh, yeah. That there's been many wars here. And so there's a lot of blood drenched into the soil of this area, which brings a lot of history. So, I mean, essentially, like if you go downtown, it depends on your mind frame, and if you're looking at all, then you're going to pick up certain things, but you're only going to pick up what you're looking for. So if you go downtown Charleston and if you're looking for ghosts, well, ghosts are, and the supernatural has been a huge thing for Charleston, and you can spend all day looking around all downtown at all the ghost locations. But then there's also the history of the pirates mm-hmm. here. And then there's the history of the Native Americans and all that they did, and so on and so forth. And really, like, you know, I've been living here off and on pretty much my whole entire life. But I've lived around the country, but I've come back here. And in my later years, I've found that, like, there's just so much to explore in this town. And you could write a plethora of books just on Charleston.
Well, so that is why – I mean, this is why we had you back, too, is because – so last December, we realized that not only did you write a book about your discoveries, like, in the landscape – but you also lived in Olympia. And so there was this bizarre connection where we have Andras Jones discovering a tree of life in Olympia that he runs, and he did this accidentally. It was his accidental initiations, and this happened when he was 40. But he did that in a way that was so similar to you that it was uncanny, where he grew up in Olympia, and then he moved away, and then eventually he came back and discovered this thing. Well, you grew up in Charleston, you moved away and traveled around and went to Olympia, and then you came back and discovered a star map. Could you tell us? I mean, so that's like the kernel of the book that it's built on. So tell our listeners what this star map is. And how did you find it? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, let me back up just to speak on Andras Jones's work. Yeah, there's a lot of peculiarity with that because I lived out there late 90s. I lived out there until about 2003. And during that time in my life, I wasn't looking out for symbols. I wasn't trying to engage myself into the occult or sacred things of sacred geometry and whatnot. I just wanted to live out there and, you know, just kind of live my life as an artist. It's a nice area for that. And, well, what I had found when I was living out in Olympia is that I was going to all these same exact locations that Andras speaks about. Now, I didn't go forth and try to find the sacred meanings behind these places. I just felt it. I was just resonating as a human being. I would go for a run somewhere and I'd just find these places. And then I would find that I liked these places and I would continue to go back to them, not really knowing why, but I just did. And so I had this special thing with Olympia that I went through, but I didn't even realize it until after the fact. Until after I've left there, and when I left Olympia, I was totally ready to get back to the East Coast, coming full circle into my life. And so I come back to Charleston. I basically I go out and I get a piece of paper that they call a degree that says that I can do these things for companies. I got this degree and got a job here in Charleston, which was located right next to downtown Charleston. And so in my predicament, what I was finding is that I need to get away from this place for my lunch breaks. And, you know, this is 2008, 2009. And already up to this point, I had been incredibly interested in symbolism and geomancy, all these sort of things. I've been reading books by Robert Bevall or Graham Hancock. There's a great book that came out called The Hidden Records by Wayne Herschel. And basically, there's just been a handful of authors out there that found connections with megalithic monuments and these sort of things. And so here I am in Charleston, you know, just kind of living my mundane life. And I'm looking around on Google Earth, you know, and just kind of wondering, you know, I'm not a historian. I'm not someone that is seeking this as my profession. It's just like it just kind of started coming along. And so what I started thinking was, you know, Charleston's a pretty old city. So I started thinking maybe I should start pinpointing all these parks downtown to see, you know, if anything came up. But if anything, it's just a fun aspect to kind of go around and looking around at these places and then, like, you know, just kind of be there for an hour or so and then go back to work. Well, after a while, I'm like looking at Google Earth and I'm just kind of wondering, you know, things are kind of starting to add up here. Things are starting to look like something. It's starting to look like an image here, an image that I'd seen virtually all over the planet that was virtually being made by all the great builders all over the planet. And so I started, you know, seeing a sort of crude representation of this being built using the monuments and parks of Charleston. And so that's basically where it began, this journey. I wrote this book, and it's kind of like a non-ending book. It's not done yet, even though it's out. It's just kind of one of these things that, like, I want to continue to pick away at for as long as I can, because it's not my sole interest. I have many interests in this weird reality we call life, But this is just like one of these things that came upon me, and I felt like I should write about it. But like as I'm writing about this, I'm going through these parks, and I'm seeing how like they all connect with stars, just like the great megalithic sites around the planet. You know, like the Giza Plateau is the most popular place to speak of this, where the pyramids all align up to Orion's belt, and actually all the pyramids all down the Nile all align to that constellation. And so I was just kind of wondering if Charleston had some kind of thing going on here, because if you walk around downtown, you're going to find it everywhere if you're looking. I mean, you're going to find Freemasonic sort of pseudo-occultic mesh of cultures that have been blended and have been used. And so there's just like many amazing aspects of this city that I found to kind of correlate with all this. But yeah, essentially, like I started matching up the monuments from each park to the star of Orion. However, what I found is that when I did that, things didn't quite match up as I had anticipated. I anticipated that Orion would be facing north, or his head is facing north, and it's kind of like the depiction that, you know, a lot of these ancient societies have portrayed Orion. However, what I found with Charleston was that when I simply flipped him upside down, as if Orion was upside down, I found that every single park matches up really nice. And so that's basically the general gist of it, where like I've gone through each park. Each park has something that stands out that truly represents that star. I think the one that really started it off for me was a park in downtown Charleston that is called the Battery.
That's the first place that I went when I was down there. That's kind of gives me a little bit of a chill when you said that. Because we were up at the top of Meeting, and we just walked down Meeting. And I'm going to be candid with you and just kind of make a joke here, but it would be really useful if you included public restrooms in your map. Because that was...
Well, then we might get there.
What's that?
When it evolves. Well, we might get there when it evolves to that point. Because what I've found at the end of this is that, I mean, it's not just these parks that turn out to be interesting, you know, that there's a lot of other things that are just surrounding the city, and you never know. The bathroom situation might be a park of its own.
I can tell you where most of them are.
Okay, well, start with the first sink. Charleston's called the Holy City. Yeah. Why is that?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, on the other side of the planet, at the 33rd degree north, is Jerusalem. Well, Charleston, South Carolina is flip side on the other side of the planet, 33 degrees north. It's on that 33 degree line. It's called the Holy City because it's the first place in all the United States that openly accepted all forms of spirituality or religion. And So that's part of why it's called the Holy City. But if you go,
it's got like 84 churches or something like that. And for people who don't, for people who don't know, Charleston is a peninsula, so it's like a 3-mile radius. So you're talking about like 84 churches in a 3-mile radius, which is just church bells and steeples everywhere all the time.
Yeah, and you can skip around, fall down, and find yourself in another church or synagogue or something. It's like these things are everywhere. But what was made clear, like if you look at these old monuments, these Freemasonic monuments, it wasn't something that was just to a certain sect of people. It was kind of like this attempt to sort of bring the entire town together in its own way. And when you go around downtown, you can still see that this was a trend. It was sort of like a popular trend to be interested in these things, these occult things. So like Charleston is known in as the Holy City. It's on the 33rd parallel. It's also shaped like a heart,
yeah, that's cool.
Like a human heart. And, that might mean something, because a lot of the main areas that we're talking about in the United States, they tend to be like body parts or sacred elements of a body. And I've always kind of felt like that Charleston was sort of the heart of this country, or it's a heart of this country.
Well, it's a major harbor. Like we said, it was one of the first battles in the Revolutionary War, one of the first battles in the Civil War. So it's like, I mean, the fact that it was the battle of the first shots in the Civil War would have something to do with the heart, to me. Do you know what I mean? That just resonates the problem starting right in the heart.
So here's sink number two, and this is a trivia question. Where in the world did the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry begin?
It's a southern thing. It started in Charleston. The southern jurisdiction is the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. And there's been a bunch of different lodges. It's not just the Scottish Rite, but this is the predominant lodge that is down here. And
is there an actual lodge down in downtown?
Yeah. Well,
because it's not well marked. I mean, I've come from the South. I come from Alabama. I've traveled a lot around, and most southern towns have like a big friggin' Freemasonic sign on the side of their lodge, and I looked and looked and could not find one, and then turned around one day and saw this monument saying that this right here is the birthplace for, I think you actually mentioning, yeah. I believe, because I'm not really sure, it was somewhere in that the corners of the four laws or whatever, but I couldn't find a lodge. Is there an actual lodge down there?
That location is no longer the location of the lodge. That location is now a bank. I think it's called the Bank of South Carolina. But it's the original – what you saw is the original location of when they started that up, which was basically like a square building that really didn't have much to it. And you'll find that a lot of the lodges around this area, they're very boring. Yeah. Yeah, it's just a square, you know, and which is intentional in itself, you know. However, there is a major Scottish Rite lodge that is located not downtown Charleston, but it's kind of like just right outside of it. And it's a huge building. And they've got double-headed eagles on like both sides of this building, and these double-headed eagles have to be at least 15 feet tall each, and the entire building itself is a very peculiar building itself. All these years I haven't really like looked too much into the lodges. And so a couple months ago, I finally braved it up to go to this main lodge because I wanted to take some photographs of it. And more importantly, I wanted to take photographs of the fact that there's an obelisk that sits out right out front of it that was knocked down about a year ago or so. It might have even been 2 years when it was knocked down. And I just noticed that they never have resurrected it back up. And they kind of just left it there in this sort of kind of demeaning kind of way. But anyway, one day I was just like, I'm just going to go up there. I'm going to go see if I can go inside and get some information, you know. And as soon as I pull up, this man opens the front door to this building. And I'm like, crap, I can't turn around now. I'm going to have to go up and talk to this man. I can't chicken out. And so I basically went up and it was this little old man that looked like Aleister Crowley. seriously, he's really old. He's shaved, bald head, pale as can be, just exactly what you would think of him. And so I went up to the door, and I was like, hey, my grandfather was a 32nd degree Mason, and I was wondering if I could take photos of the building and just kind of, you know, explore a little bit. And he was like, sure, go right ahead. And then he handed me like a whole bunch of pamphlets. and then like I took some photos, and then that was the end of that. But yeah, there are a few lodges around here. But they're not directly downtown. There are some.
Yeah, but that's what it said. It kind of seemed weird to me, almost kind of creepy in a way, because, like I said, most everybody else is very proud, but everything in Charleston seemed rather hidden. But the whole city of Charleston has like these little – there's like little hidden alleys and little back porches, or what are they, courtyards. There's like hidden courtyards everywhere. Everything seems to be not in the open.
Okay, well, which – and that is perfect because so in Andras's book, he's certain that the Tree of Life that he's found was intentionally placed there by the Masons. Now, you are not as certain, but you do wink at the possibility both unconsciously and consciously that your star map was placed there with some intention. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, well, like, when you're looking into these things, what you'll find that is common is that the people that whenever they put a monument somewhere, they always recognize that that land or that little spot was something sacred. It might even be something sacred that was way even beyond their own culture. And, you know, like, I'm in another book that just came out recently, Court Lindahl's True History Journal, Volume 2. And I basically I have one little section in it, and it's just looking at one park in this in the star map of Charleston. And, I mean, it's kind of like the details of these things are very detailed. They're hidden in the back. Everybody's a Mason around here. Not, I won't say everybody, but it is very openly accepted, which I find strange, which I'll come back to in a little bit here. But what I found in my history research is that people always find, you know, these buildings to be in some sacred places that might even be more ancient to the people that are building these things at the time. And what I was saying is that in True History Journal Volume 2, the particular park that I'm, you know, investigating here, it has an obelisk. First of all, it is the Washington obelisk. And it is like what's been said here, where it's kind of hidden off in the back of a church, kind of like not very populated. But when you go to this obelisk, which is very tall, it's the tallest one in Charleston.
Is that the Washington Park?
It's the Washington Light Infantry Park, which I've connected to the it's kind of like in the same area as the Four Corners of Law, right, where you mentioned where you saw the original lodge. Well, right across the street from that is this little park, and this particular obelisk at the very bottom, it says, which was this obelisk was built in 1860, and at the bottom it says they were of the very flower of this ancient city, her young hope and fair renown. And so what I'm just thinking is, well, you know, these people are building these things in the late 1800s, 1700s, you know, they consider this place to be an ancient city. And what I'm wondering is what that city was before the colonization of this place. So where I've found there is correlation to that as well, where the Native Americans had buildings here. They did build pyramid mounds all over this place. And I'm willing to bet that every single park was once a sacred place to the Native Americans. So,
well, by the way, before you go further, there is a public restroom right next to that park.
That's very good.
No, the interesting thing I found out about Charleston is that originally the settlers didn't settle right there. They settled 5 miles north, and then they kept dying off, and they kept getting killed, and the Indians told them to move down to the peninsula because there was these healing winds that swept out all of the evil spirits. Of course, now people have kind of said that that was because there's no mosquitoes in Charleston because the constant breeze or whatever. I mean, there's plenty in Mount Pleasant. I know that. But there is like a constant breeze that is present in Charleston. And a lot of people like Haythorne. I don't know if you know who Nathaniel Haythorne. I visited the Nathaniel Haythorne house, and I realized how old that guy lived. Mm-hmm. He was like way into his 90s or 80s or something, and so was his wife. There was another woman who had the Justine's Kitchen or something. She was like 112. There was like so many times while I was down there that I recognized these historical figures that had these asinine ages that just should not have been possible in their time periods. And I just find that fascinating. There was something else that you said in your book when you were talking about the Masons and Mysteries at the 33 parallel. If a life is taken close to the 33 parallel, this fits with the Masons' demonic mythology in which they demonstrate their worldly power by spilling blood at a predetermined locale.
Yeah, you hit upon a few things there. For one, this place is incredibly emotional. It's not called the Sensitive South for no reason. But I think a lot of that has to do with there's just been a lot of pain and misery that has come from this place. And for instance, like, I don't think that Charleston is any more of a saving breeze. It might have been at some point in time, but it's no longer anymore, because when you go out to Folly Beach, you're basically destroyed by the mosquitoes. The mosquitoes are considered the state bird here. seriously, it's that kind of big of a deal.
Well, that would make sense because, I mean, all of the people were dying. They said it was because of mosquitoes. Like, they kept dying off. But when they – in Charleston itself – the mosquitoes weren't a problem. Like in the peninsula, because of the two rivers going on either side of it. And there is a constant breeze. I mean, all along Bay Street, I noticed that all the porches were pointed a certain way. And when I asked a couple of people about it, they said that was the reason. On East Bay Street, you'll notice that they're all facing on one side of the houses, which face towards that breeze. And there's almost – I mean, come on. You lived there for a long time. I was only there for a week. But there's almost like a constant breeze from the southeast either coming in or going out.
Well, if you're walking downtown, yeah, you're going to have that breeze. So I guess if you're going along that peninsula, then it's going to have it. However, Folly Beach, its original name was Coffin Island because people – that's basically when people were colonizing, coming over here. By the point that they got in here, Folly Beach was where they dropped off all the people that were dying before they got to the actual customs port.
Oh, okay.
And they would drop them off there to die pretty much. And when you go to Folly Beach – which is right on Charleston, it's you see these hills and you kind of wonder, are there people buried in those hills? But the thing about Charleston is, it's been notorious about its mosquitoes, and perhaps like the peninsula, the sides of downtown Charleston were ways in which they could try to prevent this. But another way that they did try to combat with the bugs here was to move more inland to a small little place called Somerville, which is 15 minutes right outside of Charleston. And from what I know is that everybody in Charleston would live in downtown Charleston during the summer, I mean the winters, and then they would, you know, move towards Somerville toward, you know, in the summer because of the bug problems. So.
Okay, but so you're talking about pests and things that get under your skin, and now I need to know what lies under the rug, because there's the stories of the ghosts, you know, but then there's also things that you allude to that it's deeper than ghosts, and we're speaking about vortexes and darkness.
That's what I'm kind of wondering about this whole situation. If people live a long time, and then there's like another branch of people dying early. So there's like this balance, weird kind of yin-yang thing going on in Charleston where there's like so much death, and then there's people living to be this asinine age. And it's just kind of strange to me. I would.
Yeah, it's a really weird place. When I think of this place, I think of that scene in Indiana Jones in the Temple of Doom when they're walking through where all the bugs are, trying to feel their way through to the other side. You know, and there's like all these kind of like cockroaches and all these strange centipedes and whatnot falling all over them. And you might even get some skeletons within all that, because that's kind of like the darkness and the strange trench of this area. It kind of produces. And like even to this day, you have this like this sort of gentrification thing where there's like rich, a lot of really, really rich people on one side, and then there's like a lot of really, really poor people on the other side. So it's been a mixed bag of that kind of misery in that sense. And like at the end of the day, what you find at the end of this park is what I've connected with the star Sirius. And the last one in this park is a cemetery called Magnolia Cemetery. And, you know, this is one of those things, one of those days where I had no idea really what was, you know, this is all about. But I just happened to just started wandering through this cemetery because it was literally right across the street from my work. And, you know, I was kind of just bored looking around and whatnot. And, you know, like the cemetery is just the cemeteries that are in this area have some of the most incredible little things about them. We're not just talking about crosses and obelisks. There's and smack in the middle of this place, there's a pyramid that someone built for themselves as their, you know, where they were going to be buried inside of. And I mean, you know, you're just like kind of wandering around looking at this place, and then all of a sudden you see a pyramid. You're standing in a place that was supposedly super Christian, you know, like Charleston, South Carolina. When I was growing up here early on, like I always had this feeling that it was very Baptist, very just kind of Bible thumping kind of, you know, area. But when you like dig into these places, these people were totally into much more than one belief system. They were interested in it all, really, the Gnostic elements of these things. The very first museum in the United States was in Charleston, South Carolina. Okay, now if you go to this Charleston Museum that's still downtown Charleston, you go through this entire building and they show you little things here and there, you know, concerning Charleston. Oh, they dress like this or they did this and that. But the very last room, which is the largest room, is a sort of a room that's paying homage to Egypt and is just nothing but mummies. Yeah, it's just and I've actually put a video up on my website that shows this. And basically it's a whole room where they've collected all the gatherings of the locals that were that had contributed their stuff to this museum after they died, and they created this room that was – it's just nothing but Egyptian relics going through the whole entire thing. And so I find that interesting, you know. And that building itself, the Charleston Museum building, which is on Meeting Street, is also an interesting brick-layered building that stands out from everybody else. It's not the original location of this museum. It had burnt down years before, many years before. And in fact, that's what I hear a lot in the history of things, that these parks have been burnt down several times and then rebuilt. Some of the parks have newer elements to them, but they always seem to go back to that star that it's supposedly representing. And so to this day, yeah, I'm kind of like, you know, I don't know. I can't say for certain if this was intentional by these people that they are going to go out and build these things. I'm still trying to put my finger on that. I've talked to some local architects who have come to me with their interests in these things. I've had some local big name families that have also come to me that have also expressed their interest in these things, because this is their history essentially. And
well, speaking of history, can you tell us about 1963 and Malachi Brendan Martin?
Wait. What are we at as far as time goes?
We're getting close.
Okay, so why don't we invite him for a little bit of green room, because this little area that you're actually trying to get us to go into is absolutely bonkers and needs some like time to dig into.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's if you're hearing this and you're just kind of like perplexed, I'm still, you know, very perplexed by much of this. To be quite honest, like, you know, the time that I put into this is just like, you know, not even a percent as to what could be put into this city and to, you know, that what could be really dug up. But what you're bringing up is a story about Malachi Brendan Martin, who was a Catholic priest. And, you know, I just found this story out there. He himself wrote about this. He was a Catholic priest that began writing books at the end of his life about the Catholic Church. And basically his book, which is called The Keys of This Blood, he writes that basically he knows about a satanic ritual that was committed through the Vatican at the same time through Charleston. And it was
We'll talk about that, like Will's saying. How about I play the devil's advocate and ask you a question that you yourself
you
asked in the book.
You said devil's advocate.
What purpose could the Charlton – and maybe that I just answered it. What purpose could the Charlton Star map serve?
Well, obviously it's a place of ritual. And
that's confirmed.
Yeah, well, this is a confirmation that this was done to bring in the enthronement of the fallen archangel Lucifer. And, I'm just trying to read here what they were trying to bring in on the other side, you know, at the Vatican. At the same time, they were trying to use that energy in the Vatican through the rituals that they were committing there over a phone located here in Charleston with the people who are associated with here who are trying to create something out of that. This comes back down to the name of the city, the Holy City, you know? So obviously this is a place of magic, and it's a place that I find that is very yin-yang in that kind of realm. It could be the darkest of darkness, darkest places, or it could be a very beautiful place at the same time. It can be – what I try to do is I know that there's dark elements are out there, but I really like to pride myself on going out there and enjoying the nature of this area, which gives me, you know, a positive sort of thing. And so it's, yeah, you know, it's just one of those things I still don't know, and I'm still kind of bumping around to this day.
So why do you think Charleston is one of the most haunted places in the U.S., or is it haunted?
Well, I mean, if you go downtown, go look around at the bookstores. If you go to any of these places that you're going to be a tourist, and Charleston is a major tourist attraction. A lot of people come here from all over. What you find is that while you have a lot of people that are focusing on the Civil War, there's also this other element of ghosts and the supernatural. And so while you can get a tour on the Civil War, you could probably jump on back to the next tour, which is the ghost tour. And I think they're kind of hand in hand. You know, I don't want to get too deep in philosophy here, but like, there must be something here that like when people are in some major misery, that maybe like when you die within that misery, that maybe it kind of has this sort of magnetic aspect that clings you onto this place.
That's funny, because in the Navajo tradition, if a loved one dies in their house, they close it up and leave, because the part of them that goes on, but the evil parts, like the nasty bits, stay and then haunt that space forever. And they're like, if it happens in the house, then it's like, oh, screw that. And you close it up and put rocks over the windows and stuff, and you walk away.
Hey, yeah. John, have you ever heard of a boo hag?
Boo hag.
A boo hag, which is actually a legend specific to Charleston, where they're boo hag, don't let the boo hag ride you.
Well, I'm actually looking this up, and I've got something to tell you. It's pretty.
Well, let's follow that over to the green room. Thank you. You've been listening to John Kalen, 42 Minutes of Production of SyncBook Radio on thesyncbook.com. More information about the work of Mr. Kale can be found at cosmicgnostic.com. For more information about the SyncBook, our guests, to check out past shows, or to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, please be sure and visit our website at 42minutes.com. If you like what you hear and would like to support the show, please donate. Just click the green back next to the episode on our website, and then give us all your money. Thank you, and keep looking.
You're
up.
You're such a boo hag.
Thank you, John. That was great.
Thank you. Appreciate it.